College basketball fans, welcome back to the College Ball Show. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss everything related to college basketball. Now, right about now would be the time where we start to get into the NBA stuff, right? We call it the NBA Banter NBA Playoff Banter Podcast. You can tell I haven't said it since last July. But normally we would go right after the national championship. Oh, we're talking about the championship, and boom, we go right into the playoffs on a weekly show. Sometimes every 5 days, sometimes it stretches to 8 or 9. It kind of matters. Usually it's about weekly though. Kind of matters how the series are going. Obviously right now we do not have any series to talk about. That's been known for quite some time. And before we get into this, we just want to appreciate and thank you once again for supporting the show during a non-sports time. We've been trying to give you some content to distract you with. So we appreciate everybody who has listened and supported the show during this time. Just so you guys know where we're at, today we'll be talking about, even if it's realistic that the NBA could come back in Las Vegas. Obviously, there's a variety of plans going on behind the scenes just in case. We don't know if this thing is going to be calm by sometime in May, sometime in June, sometime in July. We really don't know a whole lot still. We obviously New York is kind of the epicenter, unfortunately, for the disease, and we're kind of taking our cues off of that as far as death rate, and a lot of states are still going up, and when is that going to peak? There's a lot of what ifs, but hey, this whole thing is speculation and what ifs anyway. So that'll be the lead topic. Las Vegas. How doable is it? And it does make sense on a lot of levels. You have a ton of, and this is without an audience, no crowd. And to have, you can literally buy floors, multiple floors of a variety of different hotels. The hotels are right there. You wouldn't even need a bunch of arenas because they have built-in smaller arenas right in Vegas. You know, so you wouldn't need a bunch of different big arenas or anything like that, but you have those too. And then also, what else is going on entertainment-wise? You know, no one in the entertainment music business is going to do a live show without fans. That kind of defeats it, right? I mean, I shouldn't say no one because I'm sure there's some bands that – and some, you know, Beyoncé's or some of these huge acts that literally could do, I mean, they're already doing iHeartRadio at home and stuff like that, right? So they have concerts. And a lot of it's like benefit concerts. But I'm saying you're not going to go on tour and tour the nation doing it via, you know what I mean, these arenas. So it makes sense on the surface. You could really – this way the players, if they're going to be gone for a couple months, they could actually bring their families and have them right there at the hotel rooms. They could just really control the atmosphere a lot better. And if you look at the MLB, some of their plans are Arizona and Florida and just having it in those two states. And maybe one would be AL and maybe one would be NL. Who knows? But that makes sense too, because you already have a lot of the preseason, the exhibition camps are, training camps are in Florida and Arizona. So that does make sense to do, you know, it's basically just getting plans ready just in case we can do this. And a lot of it is without, you know, fan participation right there, just so they could salvage the season basically. So they've been talking about that too, kind of ramping the exhibition season back up. And then be ready to go by the time. Now, there's no exact time frames, obviously. But so we're going to talk about that, about the NBA and Vegas and the pros and cons and is it even realistic? And, some of the ideas that have been thrown out there, whether it's, you know, a one and done, like literally the first few rounds are just play one and you're done, like the NFL, right? And winner goes home. Or you could do – 3-game series, 5-game series, maybe 5 and 7 for the conference in the conference finals in the NBA. So we're going to discuss a variety of that stuff, keeping it basketball, obviously. And then we're going to, you know, go in our segments that we reminisce, whether it's, you know, some of the best teams that never won a championship. We'll list a couple more of those, talk about a couple of those. My co-host Marshall has a surprise segment that he said, trust me on. So I did tell him I could just hang up the show. So we'll see where it goes. And also, I'm going to do something on Georgetown, early to mid-80s Georgetown, and some of the talent they had. And really a run that could have, that should have involved another championship. I think that's fair to say. I'm not saying they should have won 4 years in a row, but also just some of the players that came through in that time frame, kind of the core. Even when you look at center position of Georgetown in the 80s, it's pretty disgusting. So that's going to be, we're going to talk about some other stuff too. But if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, thanks for joining us. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. It streams live at archives right on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. But you don't have to just download the show from Blog Talk or listen to it in the browser. If you want to find the College Ball Show and listen to it on a variety of places, platforms, you can find it under the Ropeadope Radio Podcast at Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, really across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found everywhere, including Spotify. You can use your Siri, Alexa, Spotify, or TuneIn to find the platform. Why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com? It's thegruelingtruth.com. They got a great sponsor over there, BetNow.eu, with the promo code TGT. That's thegruelingtruth.com. It's basketball, football, boxing, baseball, everything in between. And real quick, one more thing that we're going to get to discuss in this Vegas NBA season potential. I got something for you. I actually use it myself. A lot of people, you know, archiving shows, watching stuff during this, you know, quarantine stuff. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. So you have the 7-day free trial. And even when you, you know, start it up, the plans start as low as $60 a month. There's no annual contract. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR. That's AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. Now, not everybody in the country has quality internet. A lot of places, especially outside of cities, struggle with their internet. And, you know, you can watch something on Netflix or Amazon that's on archive. That's going to be different than a live streaming program. You know what I mean? Or a whole platform, which is AT&T TV Now, the live streaming cable. If you have pretty mediocre to crappy internet, try AT&T TV. That's your normal cable platform. That's a growing platform, so it's not everywhere. It's here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, New York, parts of Florida, parts of Texas, parts of California, all the way up to Seattle, other places in the Midwest like St. Louis. Basically, you just Google it, put your area code in, see if you have AT&T TV in your area. Otherwise, AT&T TV Now, it's live streaming cable. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host and just see how he went on this mid-April day.
Hey, brother. It's pretty good day. I guess week number 4 or 5 now of chilling at home. But I mean, I've been running like a couple miles every day. This is probably the best shape I've ever been in. I guess it took me not going to work to start working out. For some reason, this is the best gym plan I've ever had, and I'm not paying a dime for it, which is kind of funny because I keep seeing on Twitter and Facebook like people who do go to the gyms and work out like religiously, like right, are freaking out because they can't do that. So I don't know. I'm oddly getting in shape now, but I'll take it. But on a sad note today, unfortunately, as I was chilling at home, the news came down that Carl Anthony Towns' mom passed away. So I know it feels like probably 2.5 to 3 weeks ago, he had that emotional message on SportsCenter.
Right.
I think from his Instagram or Twitter page that his mom had been diagnosed with COVID-19 or coronavirus. And actually, well, his mom and his dad. And the mom right, was was facing really tough issues. Unfortunately, that battle ended today. So, I mean, that's awful. And I was texting some friends, you know, I, in moments like this, like, and again, I can't pretend like I'm him at all, but you'd assume probably the best thing he could do would be go play basketball. Cause you know, probably, you know, that's normally what you hear when instance like that happened, like, you know, let's go honor my mom. Let me go play a game where I drop 50 and like, you know, the whole crowd maybe has like a certain, you know, shirt or some type of right. way to honor her name, you know, and they can't do that now. So now you're just stuck at home, you know, grieving with the family and your regular aspect of life to honor her or move past it in a way, if it's possible, is not even an option. So, I mean, obviously it's not just his mom that we've had over 20,000 people in the country now die, but that's probably the biggest name associated to a sports star I've heard of so far, unfortunately. So, I mean, I just feel awful for the guy. And if you're still under this image in our country that, you know, this really isn't a big deal and trying to downplay it, like, if you're a sports fan now, like, does this not get the point across to you? Like, one of the best players in the NBA's mom died and she suffered trying to beat this disease for a couple of weeks. So, I mean, how many more cases do you have to see to, you know, kind of have this sink in to realize how tough and unfortunate this whole thing is? So, not to start the show depressing, but that's just, you know, it puts things in perspective. Cause I think a lot of times in our society, Chris, there are people that love sports and sometimes sports is their only way of viewing things in a lens. And now you had it really affect the sport world of an NBA player who lost his mom due to it. So I think this, unfortunately, maybe opens eyes to even more people now who maybe still decided to be a little ignorant towards it. So sorry for him. I'm sure we have a lot of listeners in the Minnesota area from, you know, being that where you live and I used to. So that's just unfortunate. And it's sad that they have to do that. And even the worst part now is, you know, what kind of procession can you have to honor your mother? Normally, yeah. Situation like this, you get a funeral. But nowadays, that's really become difficult. So, obviously, heart goes out to Carl Anthony Towns, everyone else you keep seeing on Twitter saying, hey, they've lost a loved one. So, on a positive note, to try to get back in the sport world that can be fun, the Jordan documentary is coming out soon.
Yes, sir.
I've been going around to different shows and different apps and everything. I've actually been finding some good television to watch, but being a sports fan, like that is something exciting. Like we're going to see a huge documentary on Jordan, and
it's
better than watching
players play video games or play horse. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, and I love sports. I love gambling, but even watch that horse stuff, I struggled. I had it all in the background with no volume. So, yeah, watching a Jordan doc will be fun. I did get emotional seeing Tiger one yesterday. But I mean,
you're covering your mic or something.
But I did get emotional watching Tiger win yesterday. But I mean, that's also one of the coolest moments in all of sports. So, but yeah, the Jordan documentary, it's coming up this week. That's super exciting, Chris. So, yeah. Obviously, again, prayers to Carl Anthony Towns' family. But on the sport note, if you're a sport fan, you got the Jordan documentary coming up. It's 20 hours. I think they're going to space them out. They're going to give you 3 to 4 hours a week for a month. So that is something to be excited about because, as you said, the horse thing, I mean, they're trying. I respect the NBA. They're doing all they can to try to give people a sport fix. But it just maybe wasn't the coolest thing ever. But again, I'm not going to complain a bitch. I've even saw guys in NBA who are NBA players complain. It's like, dude, your league is trying to do something. You know, it maybe didn't work out, but at least the league that gives you a paycheck is trying to do something to help out people during this time.
Yeah. I didn't even turn it on, but yeah, I'm not, it's just better. I'm not ripping them out. It's just better content.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
But yeah,
absolutely.
You're right. And TikTok and all the shit that's going on. I get it. Like, I think that is a good idea because there are, you know, the NBA is big enough to where it has enough, you know, hardcore fans that will watch that all day long and, you know, go, I'm sure it gives people content for their, you know, podcasts and blogs and Twitter accounts and all that. So that's cool. But yeah,
Did you see though that Trae Young gave out a cell phone number and he's literally gave out the number on ESPN to just text and get a hold of anyone he can? And I mean, I'm sure he has his own personal phone, but what like a nice gesture. I'm sure it kind of turns into crap at times, but the dude literally gave out his number on ESPN saying, hey, like, if you want to say hi to me, reach out to me and I'll try to get back to as many people as I can. Like, that's just for how things are nowadays in our country. Like, that's a really cool sign of, you know, a guy doing his part to maybe cheer up someone's day or something that way. I thought that was really respectable for a guy to do that nowadays, how social media can be negative in so many ways, Chris.
Yeah, actually, you know what? At the introduction to Jimmy Butler coming here, his introductory press conference, he gave out his number. And he just would answer it. He tried to answer as much as he could because there's so many calls, and he kept answering, saying something quick, hang up. Answer, saying something quick. They had a video of him doing it later. Like, man, this is intense, you know. But, yeah, that is nice too. But let's get into topic. So, anyway, that we will be part of our lead topic and for the content coming out on the shows will be talking about that documentary too as it breaks down, because supposedly it really just follows their last season, which is really cool. Just to see all the different things that they was going on behind the scenes. And it's such a, you know, you just remember that year, and also once the, you know, conference finals started playing out, or just the playoffs in general. But, you know, the Pacer team that really pushed them, because it's not like, you know, once Chicago started winning, they didn't really have seven-game series, you know what I mean, once they started winning championships. It go to six sometimes, but there wasn't many. And that Pacers team really, I mean, the Utah series was damn good, and there were some good series, the Suns and even Seattle getting out early on them and losing ultimately. But I remember that Pacers. I actually watched game six the other day. It's like, wow, I remember exactly where I was watching that. And then, you know, we're not going to just talk about what we saw, but we're going to kind of go with the Bulls era. We're going to talk about Jordan in there, too. And maybe it will be the early years that we'll talk about. So it's not going to just be about the documentary. But we need to get into some content, okay? We need to get into some content right now. So here's a little clip about the NBA as far as a backup plan, basically the back-to-basketball plan. So here's just a little clip, and we'll get into this. Is this theoretically, obviously, because we don't know, a lot of it's what ifs and maybe it'll never happen, but theoretically, could this NBA, you know, season / playoffs really happen in Vegas? But here's a little clip here to set it up.
They're spending a lot of time, Jay, getting a back-to-basketball plan ready. They hope they get to use it. And in talking to executives and trainers around the league, what they're looking at is a 25-day return-to-basketball window. Hopefully, at some point, they can enact it. An 11-day series of individual workouts where there'd be social distancing for a period of time. And then, hopefully, if the clearance comes that they can play 5-on-5 basketball, a 14-day training camp. So as you hope for the country to heal and the virus to get better, look for at least about a 3.5 to 4 week return date before you'd ever get back to game.
So, and that makes sense, because obviously you can work out at home, but there's no way that these guys are going to be game ready just coming back like, yep, no big deal, we got it. You know what I mean? It will take some time to get back, as you see the MLB plan with the Florida and Arizona thing, like I mentioned. They even admit, you know, they didn't even start the season yet, but they needed, they're going to need some time to get the players ready to get going, especially in baseball when they hadn't, like I said, even started the season yet, where I don't think you'd need as much time in NBA because at least they played such a good, you know, chunk of the season. And it's just a really weird, we've had lockouts before that lasted till February. It hasn't been like hockey where they actually missed a full year, and it wasn't like baseball where they didn't have the playoffs or the World Series, which still, I remember loving baseball as a kid and it hurting me, and it kind of woke me up to money and corporate America and all that stuff and greed when it came to, you know, that happening. You can't have a fucking season and then have a lockout and not have the playoffs or the World Series. How in that could you? If the Twins were a number one seed at that time, I would be freaking the. I was freaking out already, but man, that sucks. So we've had some situations in sports. If you look at the Lakers, I mean, a lot of people think this thing's the Lakers and the Clippers. Obviously, Milwaukee lingers out there as a possible champion because of what they have, you know, around Giannis, you know, or Giannis, I should say. But when you look at the Clippers and the Lakers, and you look at the Lakers in general, just because LeBron's getting older now, it doesn't seem like he is on the court, but, you know, stuff happens. It is kind of crazy that the Lakers had just kind of established themselves late in the season with a couple of really quality wins and then that win over the Clippers. And the Clippers had also had some quality wins, well, throughout the season, but of late. And they had just started kind of ramping up their season as well. You could tell, you know, they're playing more as a unit. You know, the biggest thing with the Clippers is they hadn't got the starting five together that much. And it's just a crazy feel. And when we're setting this up, we're not going to talk about how many games it take them to come back or, you know, should they do a regular season, you know, five games and then start it. Some people talk about the first rounds. We're looking at the Sports Illustrated article, two of them, you know, kind of separately. About 10 days ago, one was written, and then just a few days ago. And it was kind of the opposite of, it's probably not going to be able to happen, don't even think about it, to, well, let's see if it happened, could this happen? You know, these are the pros and cons. But obviously with the Las Vegas thing, a lot of it has to do with just controlling the environment, being able to have everybody in one area and totally lessening the travel stuff, which obviously that's an issue. You know, they can clean up these planes all they want. They can spray them with all they want. But first of all, once you get on there, all that stuff goes to the wayside, you know, because once people start sitting by each other and touching stuff, it kind of throws out all the other stuff for the people in the future. They're not going to be able to spray down and disinfect and do all these crazy things to a plane with all these chemicals without letting hours and days of letting people go by. You know, a lot of people are like, well, they can just fumigate. It's like, you can't fumigate and then load the plane right away. You know what I mean? So a lot of this is just takes away travel. It allows, if they're going to be gone for a month or two or longer, the family to be there, like I mentioned, and just the hotels and the walking distance and the busing distance. It just all makes sense if, in fact, because obviously we're speaking in theory and speculation, but if in fact by midsummer something like this could happen. Before you even get into, well, should we do a few games? Should we do – we're going to kind of give the different options. And one of them, you know, they keep talking about this in-season tournament, which seems like a good idea for a warm-up or maybe for it to count. Whether the first round's a one and done or, like I said, three games, five games, whatever. Before we get into that, you know, the last month of ramping up tests have given us more tests in our country. But as we know, we haven't even hit 1% of our country yet. So, you know, another month goes by, you're in May. Another month goes by, you're in June. Another month goes by, you're in July. So the amount of tests that could be created by them and ramped up by then is going to be a lot, you know, a lot more than it is right now. So you kind of got to – obviously, we'd have to be back in normal society to an extent, whatever normal is going to be this summer, before any of this is going to be possible, right? You'd have to get the industry going just because – industries, I should say, going in general because – you're not going to just go, okay, the NBA is good. We still don't have enough testing to test everyone, but we're going to test multiple times because you're going to have to test these players so many times in a couple of months' span. And if someone does get like a natural temperature, you know, go up or a natural cold or the flu, you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to be really careful about that stuff. So wonder if some of the key players to a team have to sit there and go to 14 days, you know, quarantine. Like there. So there's a lot that plays into it. At first and foremost is the ambulances on site in the amount of tests, because much like boxing, I talked about this, legally in America, you have to have two ambulances ready right there to go to the hospital just in case something happens. Well, you have to have ambulances there for a basketball game, so or any game, right? So you're going to have society be moving on a fair amount. Like I said, not just because, you know, oh, we're going to fill the stands with 15,000 people. We're talking about this thing having no people at it besides the people that are there working. But just the access to that many tests, and also can you bring an injured player into the hospital, and are the hospitals in Vegas at the time or wherever else, you know, we talked about Arizona and Florida for the MLB, are the hospitals still going to, you know, are they going to have availability? And you can't stress out something that's already stressed out, you know. So, and also stockpiling the PPE, you know, all the protective gear. By the time July comes, unfortunately, some of that stuff is going to be made when we won't need it as much, maybe. You know, maybe the peak will already have happened, and now they have plenty of material, but we really needed it. That's for a different show, but we also got to remember the stockpiling of tests and PPE will be a lot better come, let's say, July than it is now or it has been in this last month. Now, let's talk about getting to the actual playoffs. Are you in favor of playing a few games, 5 games, 10 games, finishing the season? Or do you want to jump right to the playoffs? Or, like we talked about off air, which I thought was a good idea, maybe a warm-up would be that, you know, theoretical thing that they're even talking about maybe next year is an in-season, and maybe this would be Christmas time, but an in-season tournament. What are your thoughts here? Do we want to add the top – or basically the top 10 on each side, giving the 9 and 10 seed a chance to get in? Because there's – the bottom 10 can't get into the playoffs anyway if we play them all. So I don't think any of those teams should get in. But what are your thought processes? Sorry about this long-winded. I just wanted to set it up properly. My other stuff won't be as long-winded. Although, you know, I like to talk, so who knows. What do you think here? Do you think we should just do the tournament to get going, and then that should get maybe the A seed in? Or how do you think all this should play out? Because to play 1 against 30 and 2 against 29 – especially if it's a one-and-done situation, you can't be having a 17-team winning team like the Timberwolves beat someone in the top thing and then they get the playoffs. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I think that obviously you got to adapt to the situation, and there are teams right now who would have a legit chance of making the playoffs who aren't currently in. You know, if you're a Memphis Grizzly fan, I like them just because I listen to a lot. I like the guy that kind of runs a podcast for them. But anyways, you know, their team is currently in. But if you play the remainder of the season, there's a great chance they could lose out, and maybe Portland or New Orleans could take the spot. But with the time circumstances as they are, we really don't have time to do that. So I think you could just obviously go into the playoffs. As I was telling you earlier, I do think if you want to make it a little more enjoyable and include other teams and give their fan bases a chance to see them compete one more time in the season, you could have it to where you had a tournament set up for every team not in the playoffs currently, and they would play their way into deciding who could be maybe two teams that have a chance to make it in. So everyone currently out of the playoffs in the Western Conference would do a little bit of a round robin tournament or something to make a bracket. And then if you're the top two teams from that, you could have a chance to play the 7 and 8 seed. And if you win, then you're in, you know. Now, is that necessarily fair from the records? No, but if you win three or four games in a row and you've earned it, you know, so be it. Again, we're probably never going to have a season like this again. So why not just have some fun with it? And then you can kind of experiment as well as to how next year is going to go if they have an in-season tournament. So I'm with you. I think you go into the playoffs, and as they're doing these games where you have lesser-ranked teams playing against each other to earn a chance to sneak in, you could also have the teams in the playoffs who are going to be ready to go, maybe doing some, like, just scrimmages. You know, it could maybe you have a day where the Lakers play
preseason games.
Yeah, however you want to phrase it.
You know, now that we're there, not to interrupt you, but, yeah, you're right, dude. It could just be scrimmages because if we're all in Vegas anyway, just do a scrimmage.
Yeah,
and maybe lock it up against East versus West so you're not locking up, you know, head-to-head with the team you're about to play in the playoffs or something.
Yeah, so if you are having this, again, in my scenario where everyone, the lower teams are getting a chance to sneak in, you obviously it's fair to give the teams who are already in some reps. So why not have some scrimmages, whatever you want to call them, friendly matches like we'd be saying for soccer. Like, find a way to let these teams play so that once the little tournament of the essentially the loser bracket is done, then they
the
fall in
bowl.
And then they get going.
The toilet bowl tournament.
Yeah, so... And again, this will never happen again, probably in NBA history. So, again, I'm
knock
sure people will lose. People will lose their shit over, and people will be upset. But with the circumstances around it, again, now, do I think that a team like Phoenix deserves a playoff chance? No. But do I think that their fans deserve one more time to see their teams play? Absolutely. Like, you know, every fan right now who has paid for season tickets or makes it their goal in life to watch the game with their wife or husband or with the kids, like every fan should get one more game in my opinion. So why not have a little thing? And if you win it, hell, if Phoenix won the lower bracket and they could play, you know, the Grizzlies for the 8 seed to make the 8 seed, like why not? That'd be a one and done game, which would be super cool. Like that would be something unprecedented. And then once you get into the playoffs, again,
first round, we're right there now. I agree of some format. Maybe we're not on the exact same page, but
sure.
I agree with the tournament. I agree with the scrimmages. I agree with some of that. I think that does work. Now that we're at the first round, though, do you really want to risk one and done? Because if you do one and done, you should just do one and done through the whole fucking thing then, because you could have the Clippers or the Lakers, who everybody wants to see in the conference final, and almost everybody in the world thinks that is the NBA playoffs. It would really suck for them to drop out after one game. Do you think a minimum of 3 or maybe 5 for that first round? What are your thoughts there?
Well, yeah, I think the one and done is scary. And as I mentioned, I guess this turned into a Grizzlies podcast. Let's say
what
drop
the hell
right.
Is this your segment? This is your segment, isn't it? You're sneaking
no,
in.
No. Let's say Ja Morant goes off and beats the Lakers. Like he has a freakish game like he's done this year. And now LeBron's out. Oh, shit, this is not what we wanted, you know? So I do think a best out of 3 scenario would be ideal.
Ideal, but it'd be minimum.
Well, yeah, minimum. But, you know, I do think that regroup. I think the best out of 3, the time constraints are an issue because they do not want to prolong the season longer than have to, but still want to get something out of it, I would honestly be fine if you did best out of 3 for like the whole playoffs. If you needed to get a season in and with the mapping of playing things out and everything involved, you know, because realistically, normally in the NBA, the playoffs are like over 2 months. So, hey, again, realizing things are different. Best out of 3, every series in the playoffs, let's go. Now, maybe you could have it at best out of 3 for everything, and then the finals be 5, you know. But if we're seriously looking at, you know, time for next year and putting things into perspective, I would be fine personally with having best out of 3 for everything. Now, is that ideal? No. Does it kind of cheapen things? In a way, but realistically, 3 games is enough.
Even.
3 games is enough of a sample size, though, to, you know, if a top seed has a hiccup, okay, so be it. Like, you had your one hiccup, now you're back at it. And I guess, realistically, that I don't feel that bad for a best out of 3 because the home court advantage is gone. You know, it'd be one thing if you were doing a best out of 3 and, you know, all the games were just in L.A. and you're the road team. Or,
right.
Or, you know, a lot of times in NBA, the playoffs for home are such a massive, huge kick. Well, there's no home kick. It's you're on the court and that's it. So
right.
That's my answer, Chris. I, I think best out of three works for the whole thing. It makes it a little bit go quicker. Best out of five would be awesome, but I think if time constraints and looking forward to next year is an issue, I'd be okay with that. Obviously, what's your gut say on that?
Well, let's say I'm glad you brought up the 2 month. It's about 8 weeks, the playoffs, and that's with every single series set at seven, but at least going four games, at least, right? It's either four or five, really. It's probably about four and a half, maybe. I don't know. Actually, it may be. How many sweeps are in the first round? Two of them, three of them tops? I mean,
what'd you say?
How many sweeps are in the first round, generally? Like one, two, three tops?
I'd say on average we get two. Because, again, to hit on the home court, a team that will lose the first two games and get their butt kicked, you come home for that game three or game four,
right. It's
probably like an 85% chance you're going to win one of those games.
Right.
Even if you might lose the series 4-1, but, hell, you had the one night where your home crowd went to support you and you won.
So my point is it's at least four games, if not four and a half, almost, like closer to five than four for sure on average, right? I think that's fair for the first round. So, and this is just offhand, just kind of knowing how many playoffs we've watched, over our lifetime. And so they're used to about five games, let's just put it that way. It might be even actually more than five, could be 5.2, whatever. Then the next series, then it's still kind of interesting because it cuts down the number of teams and then a number of series, but you could have one sweep in there, and that could be the same amount as the first round, if you catch my drift. So it's five. I think because of the 2 months already, if they could start July, August, those 2 months, that's 2 months right there to get the whole thing done. And remember, there's also breaks from usually a large break from the conference final to the NBA finals too, right? If you look at past times. So basically the playoffs are starting this Saturday on schedule. That's when it was, April 18th. So would you be late? Yeah, this whole thing is going to be late. And you could always start, like they've said, maybe start the season in Christmas, either shorten the season
or
start the 2020-21. In Christmas, around Christmas time, or just shorten the season in general, start Christmas and not have to extend it at all, just shorten the season. Either way, you're going to be taking some losses, and it is what it is. But I think you could do best out of five for the first two series, or the first two rounds. I really do. But I'd be okay with 3-3 for the first two rounds, but at least 5-7 for the conference finals and the finals. I really think that if you look at how this thing would play out, I think you could get it in because there's not going to be, college football has that week before thing, the zero, week zero and all that, and that's great, and that's going to get more popular. Miami, Florida got talked into it, and they were pissed off that they had to do it, actually, the way the season went. But that's the 22nd is what I'm trying to say. So the 29th, really that Thursday is when it kicks off. The 27th is your first weekend of college football. So you're not really even playing too deep into that. And it's not till the 10th that, or the 3rd or whatever, that football starts, the NFL. So when you look at it, you're like, I think if they've already finished a full seven-game series potential in each of the four rounds, I think they could do this. And remember, the reason why I think 5-7 is doable, I think 5 is doable for the first two rounds, but I'd be okay with 3. But I think 7-7, or like I said, 5-5, if the first two are first two rounds are threes, I think they can pull this off. Another thing to think about is they can go every other. There's no traveling. You don't need that extra day to go home. You can still get, first of all, they're getting rest right now as far as game leg rest, you know what I mean? Like body, overall, mental, they're getting a rest right now. So if you can get these guys back into shape, they're going to be pretty fresh for this playoff run. So if, you can give them a night off, just go every other day, then you don't have that 2 or 3 day gap in between. And then you wouldn't have to have that 3 day gap, which, it's like a Monday, Thursday, Monday for the finals. You wouldn't even have to spread it out that far. And that's what you got to think. We do that stuff already, and we get it done in 2 months. So if they can get it up and running by July sometime, I think it's doable, and I think you can do 5-5-7-7 for all four rounds, man.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess just for me, I would just be happy with 3-3. I mean, just if I could see basketball, and if they say, hey, we're doing best out of three for the sake of just time, I'm good with it. Now, in a perfect world, sure, I would love to get the 5-5-7-7 as you suggest. I think in a situation like this, at least this is my opinion, which does not affect Adam Silver at all, I think they're going to want to give the fans something, but also want to map it out to where it can be done as soon as possible. That's just me, you know, so we disagree on that a little bit, but we both want to see basketball. And if you are curious as to why the NBA is mentioning starting in Christmas and weren't sure, it's because they don't want to fight with the NFL and not fight literally, but not want to compete for ratings because as many people as love different sports in our country, NFL currently is still king. So yeah. If you're trying to rep LeBron and Kawhi and all this stuff next year in October, November, you're going to get shattered. Like, it's not that time. So why not get going when NFL essentially is in playoff mode and you can start your season going again. And then maybe next year you just have a 52 game season or something to that effect, you know? So yeah, I'm with you. I hope they find a way. You mentioned all the medical reasons at first, which obviously all fair and valid points. We'll see what happens, but you know, again, just looking at this outside of the virus itself, this is a billion-dollar company, and I think they're going to try and find any way possible to get this done while also keeping in perspective of people's health and, like, livelihood. I think Adam Silver, for all we know, is not a guy like, you know, for example, for Dana White and whatever. I'm not the biggest UFC guy, but I think he literally is wanting his sport to continue no matter what. At least that kind of is the perception of having a fight island and all this stuff. And he had to have people from Disney and ESPN who said, we're the high execs, tell you, dude, no, take a break, you know?
Right.
So I think Adam Silver is going to do all he can to get the sport back when he can with crossing the T's and dotting the I's and making sure that he's not putting his sport above the health of other people in our country. Cause we had people bitch at NBA when they had players getting tested, you know, but yeah. Like, I think we're going to find some way. And I think the biggest thing, at least for mine to kind of wrap this point up, is once one sport gives this a shot, if they can figure out some type of system, then we can go from there. If baseball does start playing games in June and it works in Arizona, then boom. Okay, what type of methods are you using? What are you doing for travel and transportation?
Right.
You know, because the MLB is looking at having, you know, a season in June. And I get the players want to get paid, but can you really put 30 teams in a city and expect everything to go smoothly? So I do think that a lot of these issues we're looking at for big picture are awesome, but you have to put in perspective these people have families and, like, you know, it's just there's so many what ifs. Now, I do obviously think Vegas would be maybe a better city to hold players than in Phoenix, but yeah, so I hope it gets done right. I hope people don't rush. And I do have faith in Silver that he's going to do what he can. You know, compared to, I guess this is my last point, compared to Roger Goodell currently, who is giving the perception of, dude, I don't give a shit. We're playing football. Like, you know, the draft's on being delayed. And you have NFL GM saying, dude, like, we have to have a draft this year and we don't really get to interview players. Like, I think the NBA is doing all they can, Chris, from a PR angle to show that, hey, we want to give you a sport. We want to do what's right, but we're going to make sure we do it properly, which I think says a lot compared to some other sports currently in our country.
Well, and also Goodell sent out an email, basically don't publicly rip the fact that we're doing free agency in a draft still. It's like, what the hell? It's just so stupid to send out that email. But also,
I know
they were literally going to do, they were going to try to do the draft straight up with the players getting invited and everything. You know, not that long ago. Like, it just, we now know they're going to stream it or whatever, but it's just like, he was trying to get the 50 players still in one room. You know, it's just like, dude, what are you doing? Like, because, you know, it's not just the players, it's the families too. It just doesn't line up to do it that way. But I'll say this, if they, go ahead.
Sorry, it does make you wonder, how the NFL would have handled this if they'd been in season. Like, they're the luckiest organization in our country. They still could possibly play games during NFL week one, even without fans, and have a season. I mean, Goodell should be, you know, and again, this is all awful for our country, but real, if we're going to talk about just sports from that angle, dude, you're the luckiest sport because you're not being affected as of yet.
Yeah, I mean, the damn Olympics got canceled, so... I mean, that's like $1 billion worth of investment on NBC, you know, so. But, yeah, you're right. I just put it this way. If we can get this thing going sometime in July.
Sure.
To me, you got 2 months. You can do more than three-game series. I guess that was my point. I'll be happy if it comes back. But if you get the normal – you have 2 months of normal NBA anyway, playoffs, and that's with seven-game series. So – I think if it's up and running, I don't think the problem will be having a five-game series, to be honest with you, just because we already do it, and there's not going to be any travel involved. But it's interesting. It's really, really interesting, and there's a lot to look at. We're going to spend the rest of the time we have here. I am going to talk about early 80s to mid-80s Georgetown. We're also going to go over a couple more of those teams that didn't cut the NCAA title net down that should have, that had that just great teams. You're like, how in the world didn't you? But I'm going to go ahead and pass it off to my co-host and show ultimate trust in his segment. It's a blind segment. I have no clue what he's talking about. And just know I could shut it down. No, I'm just kidding.
All right. This is a six-question college basketball trivia segment.
Oh, here we go. He knows the answers. I don't.
And you know how
friends always
say,
you already did the test.
It's the imaginary beer tab you have with your boys. Dude, however many questions you get right, I'll buy you that many beers next time I see you. So, Chris, I'm a man of my word. However many of these you get right, I will buy you.
Now, is this for both of us or just me?
Just for you. Just for you.
Oh, that's weak, dude. Why would it just be me? Why wouldn't we blindly do both of them?
Well, next week you may give you a quiz because I want to come up with these on my own and not let you know. So just kind of just a blind fun quiz.
All right, go ahead.
All right. So first question: what player was the only college basketball player to ever accumulate 2,000 points, 300 steals, and 200 threes? A. Pete Maravich. B. Juan Dixon. C. John Wall. D. John Stockton. Again, the only guy to ever score 2,000 points, 300 steals, and 200 threes. I'll
read
the answer one more time.
And this is college, right?
Just for their college time. Yes, sir. I'll read the answer one more time.
So 2,000.
2,000 points.
Okay.
300 steals.
Okay.
And he hit 200 threes. Again, your possible answers are A, Pete Maravich, B, Juan Dixon, C, John Wall, or D, John Stockton.
I'm going to go B. I'm going to go
ding,
Juan.
Ding. I owe you a beer. Juan.
Hey. I like this game because I got one right.
You're on to question number
two. The only reason why I did that is because I figured it would be like kind of a trick question. Like one doesn't seem to exist. Like it shouldn't be there. But, hey, wow, it is him.
I threw in Stockton because I thought Stockton would be a good fake answer. But you looked past it. All right.
I almost went there.
I owe you one beer. One of these teams is in the top nine for most wins in college D1 history. So one of these teams has recorded the top nine wins ever in D1 history. The other three answers are wrong, okay?
Okay.
Top nine most wins ever for D1 hoops. First answer, A, Villanova, B, Florida, C, Temple, D, Indiana. I'll read them again. One of these teams is top nine for most wins ever. The others are not inside the top nine. A, Nova. B, Florida. C, Temple. D, Indiana.
So one of them is not in it?
One of these teams is in the top nine for wins of all time.
So I want to say Temple is like an outliner that I know has a good – it's kind of like the Minnesota Gophers football team. They've won six national championships, but it's so long ago, you know? I'm looking at Temple, but Indiana, you just assume would be up there. And then what? It was Villanova. What was the third team?
And Florida.
And Florida. God. So I'm narrowing it down to Indiana and Temple. I got to say Indiana.
Oh, you should have went with your gut, bro. Temple? You've been 2 for 2. Against Temple.
Dang it.
I was like, oh, man, he's going to be 2 for 2. You overthought it. All right.
I mean, you know, you'd think Indiana's in the top 9.
I mean, that was a good fake answer.
They're
like
undefeated.
John Stockton.
The only undefeated. No one's gone undefeated.
True. All right. A Division III basketball player set the all-time record for threes made in a game with a number of he hit 18 threes, 21, 32, or 27.
Oh.
A D3 basketball player's record for most threes ever hit in a game. A, he hit 18, B, 21, C, 32, D, 27. This is a true fact from a D3 game.
This is crazy. I'm going to say B.
You went with, are you all 21?
Yeah.
Correct answer was D. The dude hit 27 threes in a game.
That's D3, though. That doesn't count. That's crazy, dude. Right when you started going up in number after the 18, I was like, oh, Jesus. Wow. This happened? I can't believe it.
All right, there's 3 questions left. I owe you 1 beer. What is the lowest seed to ever win the national title for just Division I? A, a 6 seed won the title. B, a 7 seed won the title. C, an 8 seed. D, a 9 seed. What is the essential lowest or highest, however you want to see it, team to ever win the title? 6, 7, 8, or 9?
I can't remember if it's 8 or 9. Oh, my God. I'm going to go 8.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yes.
Villanova, 1985.
Georgetown. Yep.
All right.
I couldn't remember if Nova was 9 or 8. I was like,
All right, cool. All right, I owe you two more.
Two and a half. You owe me like a half because I narrowed down that one, Indiana.
Indiana Temple. Okay, I owe you a 12-ounce instead of a mug.
Yeah.
Jack Davidson from Wabash College set the record for most consecutive free throws in a row in a college essentially season. A, 52. B, 60. C, 75. D, 95.
I'm going
your
D.
Record, you're going what?
D.
95 is correct. The guy made 95 free throws in a row.
Hey.
All right, I'll be 3. And the last question of trivia, and I might even have to do some for you next week because it's kind of fun. Who had more points in their 1 year of their college career? Carmelo Anthony in Syracuse or Kevin Durant season in Austin, Texas?
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to add Kareem Abdul-Jabbar because that would have been a trick question because they couldn't play as freshmen. man. Well, he played in the Big 12, did Kevin Durant, which is more scoring league. Now, is this regular season or is this the whole first year?
This was just the points for the year off of Sports Reference.
Because you had a guy in Durant getting knocked out, I believe, in the round of 8. Or was it 16? I don't remember. Was it Sweet 16? I think it was. I don't think it was round of 8 when Texas got knocked off. So I'm kind of talking this through because those are extra points. So I could see Durant scoring more points during the regular season, but I wonder if the amount of points in the Elite Eight, the Final Four, and the final game put him over the top and Melo. Damn. I'm going to go Durant.
Hi, you're right. That's another beer. Melo had 778 points in that year. KD dropped 903.
Man.
So for the random trivia quiz, I owe you some beers, my friend. Nice job on that. I'm happy I tricked you with one false answer.
Yeah, right?
I'll need to make it a little more difficult. But that was your random segment of the week with some trivia just for fun for the hell of it.
That was good. I got to give you that. That was good. I was a little like, here we go.
And there was no random ask question. There was no random question where I was like, what is the most points ever scored by a Carolina Tar Heel in a game, then just leave you with a blank answer.
Yeah, that, I thought it was going to be shit like that. Like, oh, here we go. Dude. I don't know, dude. Like, I'm not sure. Yeah, that was good. That was good. I'll give you credit for that. That's for sure. And real quick, we're going to list some teams that could have been, you know, should have, could have, would have, which is Minnesota sports in a nutshell since 1991 after the Twins won. But this is right around the time, you know, you're a kid, you know, once you're 3 and 4 and 5 and 6, and you start to, like, remember minor little things that kind of stand out. Like, I can't remember watching the full game with Georgetown and North Carolina. I remember the game. I remember the lead-up a little bit before, and I remember the shot, right? And I also remember that dude throwing the ball to Worthy, thinking his guy was in the backcourt still with him. And the game was over. And I bring that up because that was the first year that Georgetown, you know, not the first year they had ever made a championship, but this is kind of the first year of this run where you're like, wow. Like, if you look at their roster in the 81-82 season, Sleepy Floyd was like the standout guard on that team. They had another senior, Mike Hancock. Oh, and Eric Smith. I actually forgot about this guy. Forward Eric Smith. He was a senior. But as a true freshman, they had this guy named Patrick Ewing. Maybe you've heard of him. Also, Anthony Jones and Bill Martin. Anyway, they got beat, as we've said a couple different times now, with the North Carolina. And then Sleepy Floyd went away. And I think they got to the second or third round that next year, Georgetown. But, you know, you brought in David Wingate, who was a true freshman guard. Pretty big guard, too, sitting at 6'5" back then. Michael Jackson as well. Another, you know, the third leading scorer. Both those freshmen were second and third leading scorer on the team. And although that Anthony Jones, he actually got in there as well. He was a pro, and Bill Martin was in there with Ewing. So the next year, that year, they didn't go as, you know, as far. But then 83-84. And if you look at that squad, you know, by the time – you also added Reggie Williams at that time as a true freshman. I almost forgot. And a Michael Graham who played a little bit off the bench. But Ewing, Wingate, Bill Martin, Michael Jackson, like, if you look at – I'm looking at – that's five dudes in the pros right there. And that year, they were 34-3 overall. This is under John Thompson, obviously. At 14-2, they won the Big East. And this is kind of – the reason why I brought this – team up is just because this is really when college basketball for me, even though I was a really little kid, it started to click. I started to remember this stuff, you know. And in the Final Four that year, they beat Kentucky 53-40, and then they beat Houston, the Slamma Jamma, you know, with Hakeem Olajuwon and company. They beat them 84-75 in the King Dome. Both of those, that was both in New Orleans. And so, you know, that team was just dominant, dude. They were just so damn good. And I just kind of remember Georgetown is the first program that really turned me on all the way to college basketball. I mean, don't get me wrong. That North Carolina team had Perkins, Jordan, and Worthy on it. You know what I mean? So I understand why they lost that game. But like I said, I only remember, like, key moments of that game. And it didn't really click all the way. But Georgetown, like I said, was that first squad that really, really got me. You know what I mean? And I just remember them. I just remember, you know, John Thompson. I just remember everything. But that next year, they were still 14-2. And that was good for second in the Big East. 35-3 overall. They had everybody back that, you know, Bill Martin is the only senior on the squad. And they actually had a little bit more depth, too. And they went pretty deep. They had Brodnex and McDonald. And I forgot about this dude, Dalton. He got in 36 games worth. So he didn't really play much, though. But when you look at that squad, so they had everybody back from a national championship. And this is – obviously we just brought this one up, and that's what made me remember. You know, this is the year they beat Loyola Marymount in a crazy that it was only 65-53 or 65-53. Loyola was still a couple of years away from being able to put up 139 points a game or whatever. They beat Georgia Tech that year, who was ranked sixth going in overall. And then they beat St. John's when St. John's was, well, St. John's, right? They were third ranked going in that year nationally. And, God, you just look at this stuff. And for this still to go down 66-64, we all know how there was, the bucket got, it was a short shot, well short, and it was just like an alley-oop. And, oh boy, he did it. I always says it was a pass, just joking around. But that was, I mean, that was the obviously the biggest upset at that time. And Georgetown clearly should have went back-to-back years. I mean, clearly, you know, that's obviously not up for debate. And it was always one of those I remember as a great program, but also when I look back at that, and, you know, after that, they still had a lot of guys that were seniors, and they made it to, like, the second round, and they had a good season, but they didn't have Patrick Ewing. And I just remember that's the first squad that I followed somewhat, and it really got me into the NBA. But just remembering that they didn't win a bunch of championships after that or anything like that. But, you know, when you look at the Patrick Ewing, right, and even the Charles Smith, who didn't get a ton of rebounds, but he was pretty damn good. But you look at, you know, in my mind when I'm young, I kind of remember it Ewing mourning Dikembe, you know what I mean? That was not exactly the way it went, but even in the 88-89 season, they already had Charles Smith as a guard, but then they had Alonzo Mourning. And then on that same squad, I believe he redshirted that year, I'm not totally sure, but they had Dikembe Mutombo too, dude. So imagine a 6'10 center and a 7'2 center. Actually, he didn't redshirt. He came off the bench. So you're coming off the bench. Your starting center is freaking Alonzo Mourning, a top-tier guy in the league, and then Mutombo coming off the bench. And then that's, you know, the very next year, you basically are playing with two centers, and you're playing Mourning and Mutombo in the same damn lineup. So just kind of looking back at Georgetown, and they kind of got me all the way in. I remember Indiana. I remember Danny Manning with Kansas. I remember a bunch of players and teams at that point. But obviously, Georgetown, because of the time frame, you know, that was a team that really stood out to me as the squad that kind of turned me into college basketball. And like I said, it's tough to mess with that center run, dude. You know what I mean? It is really tough to mess with that center run. Did you want to get into a couple more of these teams that never made it, or should I list a couple?
I can do that as we wrap this baby up. And just speaking for one of the first teams I kind of remember, you know, I was born in 84, so I was like getting into college and stuff in the early 90s, kind of middle 90s when I started remembering. But for mine was the UCLA run when it was like Tyus Edney,
yeah,
the O'Bannon brothers. Like, O'Bannon, I remember that. I thought
Toby
that was
Bailey.
Pretty like pretty badass names, badass dudes. They had like the cool,
yeah,
you know, shiny jerseys. Like, that was kind of my first, you know, I guess, welcoming into the sport of college basketball with the UCLA run that they had. And obviously then I kind of trickled in Carolina. That was so about 5-6 years after you, but same kind of idea.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, as Chris said last week, we went over the top 36 teams on sportingnews.com to never win a title. Again, I think when the people on this website did this list, they were looking partly into how good of a regular season record you had and then what your team was.
And it kind of felt like the 80s and on is basically what it looked. Because there are,
yeah,
some teams back that didn't, that probably should be on this list.
Yeah. But, you know, but for example, as we mentioned last week, there was a Kentucky team ranked at number 20 who was, I mean, you had John Wall, Boogie Cousins. We actually talked about them losing to West Virginia on last week as well for one of the games I always remember. But, you know, so I think this list was done pretty well. But also they kind of looked at regular season records more so than how loaded some of these teams were, to put things into perspective. Because, again, if you're looking at the best teams, John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins would have blown the doors off a lot of these people. And then
yeah,
also
Wichita State and Cincinnati with Martin and all that. Those teams, you know, you're right, it's regular season.
And, you know, and to tie this into when we first started doing these segments of quarantine basketball life, the number 19th best team to ever win it, not win a title, they put UNLV 37-2. I mean, I remember you breaking this team down quite a bit. If you went 37-2 and you averaged 92.5 points a game, you were probably better than the 19th team to ever not win it. But anyways, you know, just kind of do this for fun. Obviously, that UNLV team was pretty special. And I kind of wish that they would get back to being really good again. They've had years with Lon Kruger at times, but it really has been quite a bit since UNLV was a dominant team. It kind of makes you wonder, maybe the recruiting draw is not quite what it should be with living in Vegas. But anyways.
They did cheat to be that good, too. True. So let's not forget about that part.
That's true.
They just need a coach that bites towels the whole time, and they'll be good to go.
Number 18, this kind of ties in, as we're kind of tying this all together, and what we've been doing the past month. They had the 93-94 Tar Heels, obviously with Jameson on there. That was a pretty talented team. Again, at 17, as I mentioned, they put Wichita State. Now, if you remember that year, they were undefeated. Like, obviously, hell of a year. Congrats. You made a great, great run. You ran into Coach Cal, which obviously wasn't the best draw for you. I actually remember watching that game in San Diego, and they lost 78-76. But were they the 17th best team ever? No. Did they have a magical run during their season? Absolutely. Because there's a very short handful amount of teams, Chris, that ever have gone through a regular season undefeated. Even if your division isn't the most, you know, loaded Big Ten conference ever, it still takes a hell of a season to not have a game where you decide to slip up.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Another one, 22, is Duke 2005-2006. They were 32-4. Florida won it that year. They had J.J. Redick, my co-host's favorite player of all time. Just kidding. He averaged 26.8, though. That's pretty crazy. They had Shelton Williams, 16-2 in the ACC. But then Tyrus Thomas and Glenn Big Baby Davis beat them 62-54. That's one I do remember. UMass with Marcus Camby. And in this picture, there's a dude from Oklahoma State. That's Big Country Reeves right there. Bryant Reeves, that dude in that picture, that's trying to guard. And I'll repeat, trying to guard Camby. That UMass team, though, like you mentioned, they were 35-2, but they ended up getting beat. But yeah, Kentucky ended up beating them, and that was a pretty damn good team. I think St. Joseph kind of plays into that as well. You had Jameer Nelson, you had Delonte West. Both those guys had really damn good, solid pro careers. But a lot of that was just. And UConn won that year. They weren't going to beat them. And that a lot of that was, like you said, regular season. They were 30-2. We talked about Temple earlier. They were 32-2 when Kansas won in 87-88. That was that Danny Manning team. They had Mark Macon. How do you say that guy's name? I remember that guy. They ended up not finishing it off. And here's another one that I actually did believe here. Number 26, Ohio State, 2010-2011. With Jared Sullinger in the middle, 17-10. With Buford, who was just that long, lanky defender and could score. They had Aaron Kraft that was just in your face. The guy that a lot of people are either love to hate. All up on you on defense. And then that
I'm trying to remember.
Did
they get knocked out by a Big East team? I remember was it a Big East team that
Kentucky
knocked them out?
Kentucky beat them 62-60 in the Sweet 16. But then they had my page froze up on me. That three-point specialist starts with a D. It's like Gabier or I can't remember his damn name. But that – I actually believed in that squad. I thought they'd win. I really thought that they would win on that one. And Kansas, of this year, they put on this because of how they closed, because of the talent they had. And I can see that, but they do have the 2015-2016 team that Villanova won that year. That was 33-5, and they had Ellis, Frank Mason, Devontae Graham, and Wayne Selden on that squad. Ended up getting beaten the Elite Eight by Nova.
Yeah, you could do one of these on Kansas for like you could do like 10 of them, which I've always loved because Kansas would get bounced out. It's a beautiful thing. I guess my last 2 cents for this is the 2007-2008 Memphis Tigers, who were number 13. I actually was sitting at the Applebee's bar I worked at in Bloomington, not too far from you, brother, watching that game when Memphis played Kansas. And if Memphis would have made free throws that night, which Calipari, I believe, sometime in the year made that quote of, I don't really care about recruiting guys to shoot free throws. Well, it bit him in the ass that night.
Yeah, that's right.
Memphis couldn't hit a free throw to save their life. Freaking Mario Chalmers busted a three to send the game in OT, and Kansas cut down the nets that year. Memphis won 38-2. I mean, he lost one game up until the title, but the free throw quote was a little bit of negative karma, and Memphis came up just a little bit short that night, and that was one year where Kansas did get the job done and step up and win a title.
Yeah, you're right. Here's another squad that I believed in. Couple years later in the Big Ten. Maybe that's just me hoping Big Ten will win the championship. But this is number 36, 2012-2013. Took them a little while to get going, but once they locked in, I think they had a 2 or 3 game losing streak. Once they locked in, it was tough. Indiana that year, Louisville won, or not really won, actually. So they should give it to Indiana. No, I'm just kidding. But they had Cody Zeller, Oladipo. They had a freaking squad, man. And they ended up getting beat by Syracuse in the Sweet 16 that year. But that was a damn good squad there. They were definitely deep. Do you want to shut this puppy down here, sir? You got anything else?
No, that's it. But I will have a little more trivia for you next week. I'm not sure if I'll be offering up beers. I might be owing you a 12-pack here. The way that went, you're a little too good at it. I'll have to step up the degree of difficulty.
Well, maybe you could find some that you don't know the answer to, too, so we can both play and that type of thing,
true.
Too.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, I have a test on the 2019-2020 season, a blind test that we can both do, actually. I forgot about that.
There we go. But. Sure. All right, cool. Well, we'll do that. We'll be able to talk about Jordan next week. We'll have some fun with the quiz. We'll obviously just be – I'm sure we might even get – A couple more bits of news. You never know. Obviously, with all this stuff going on, things are changing quite a bit as we go. But yes, as we'll be back next week, again, as I always say, stay safe and healthy. I always say that during this podcast. Now that means a lot more than regular. So stay inside, go get your groceries, go for a run, and make this as mentally as peaceful for you as you can, and try to get in, you know, some runs or FaceTime with family or do something. Try to stay positive, and we'll do our best to give you an hour where you can just relax and enjoy and listen to a podcast about sports with two guys that are trying to do their part. So until then, have a good week. The boys are out. Peace.